So today we're very happy to welcome Josh Spiegel from Toronto. Josh is currently a fantasy and done law for federal film in Toronto. So we've been interested in the Department of Physical Sciences, also the Health of DAA in Dunlop. And so today, let's tell us all about the template. Take it away, Josh.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the wonderful introduction. Yeah, it's great to be here. This is I was just telling I'm on the way up. This is my first time visiting Perimeter and Waterloo. I have not been out pretty much anywhere beyond Toronto. It took me a full year before I arrived in Toronto where I was able to get to my office. So the rate of exploration for Canada is increasing rapidly. And that will be relevant to this talk in the very smooth segue, since we're gonna be talking a lot about exploring parameter spaces and in particular dynamic nested sampling, which is used particularly heavily in cosmology to do things like model comparison as well as posterior exploration. And I'll talk a little bit about what this thing, what exactly nested sampling is doing, how it works, what exactly the dynamic part means, how it connects to various algorithms, and then various pros and cons for what that. If there's extra time left over, I also have some extra slides which we can use to either go through some very simple examples to kind of demonstrate how this works with a code that I've done, or we can talk more broadly about model selection problems and how nested sampling may or may not be helpful. So the background to this is, we're going to start out with a very basic version of Bayes' theorem with a bit of extra sauce thrown in. So the way that Bayes' theorem works is that you have your posterior or the probability of your parameters, theta, given your data, and also conditioned on a particular model, M. And if you do some factoring and rewriting, then you use Bayes' theorem, which allows you to essentially do this. You can write as a product of the likelihoods that you have here, multiplied by the prior, the probability of your parameters given the model over the evidence. This is also called the marginal likelihood, which is the probability of the data given the model. This is called Bayes' theorem. The reason I've explicitly indicated the model as through all parts of this is that if you're interested in, say, comparing multiple models, then it is important to actually know which one you're conditioning on at any given time. So the motivation behind nested sampling kind of comes from two different angles. And I'll go through one, I think, a little bit more intuitive explanation and one a little bit more technical. So in all types of inference problems that come up all the time in cosmology, you want to compare models, say, using some modified gravity or say using, a time-dependent dark matter model. You want to explore what the parameters actually are. And so the first one is just, in terms of sampling the posterior or generating samples to get some approximation. One way to look at this is a picture like this. Let's imagine you have some likelihood. It kind of has this weird shape. These little plateaus are essentially these little contours that you often see in lots of plots, and you have some prior. So let's just start with this kind of picture. There are two ways to think about trying to solve this problem. We know that trying to generate samples directly from the likelihood is hard. If it was easy, then I wouldn't be giving a talk. And in cosmology in particular, right, you have this very complicated model that you're trying to evaluate against very complicated data set. And so doing this comparison is very non-trivial. And you don't really know what this distribution looks like, what the actual constraints in your parameters are given for a given data set. So the most common algorithm that's used in a lot of these inference things is MCMC or Markov chain Monte Carlo. And the way I like to think about it is MCMC is trying to solve a hard problem once. In other words, you're trying to take some point and you're trying to explore the distribution, randomly by moving a bunch of steps. And what you want to do is essentially set it up so that the number of the amount of time you spend in a given location is directly proportional to the probability density at that location. So far, so good. But this is a hard problem, right? You're just trying to sample directly from this thing. You have to do all this fancy work and blah, 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 blah. One thing that's easier than this is just generating a random sample within some bounds. In other words, if I have this whole distribution, I just want to pick a random point inside the last contour. That's probably a little easier than trying to generate this particular sequence of steps that is trying to really approximate this likelihood directly. And that's what nested sampling tries to do. Is nested sampling says, let's say I have some volume. And what I want to do is I want to break up this problem into many different easier problems and solve those easier problems many, many times. And so you start out with this one on the bottom, And the idea is that for every point, it's going to define some likelihood. That likelihood is going to define some contour. We don't know what it is, but we'll ignore that for now. And then all we want to do is that contour at some iteration, I minus one, we just want to sample a point inside the contour. Easy enough, right? All you need to do is just say, pick a point inside. Point could be anywhere. And then we're going to shrink. So then we just want to repeat the problem again. This new point is going to define a new contour, a new likelihood. And we just want to pick a point inside that contour. And then it has some new, volume. And then we sort of rinse and repeat. So that's nested sampling in a nutshell. Is for Markov chain Monte Carlo, you have this picture above, where you're really trying to construct this sequence of steps and chains, and in such a way that the frequency or the amount of time you spend in any given location is proportional to the probability. And nested sampling, you're essentially trying to just pick a point at random that's, within some given region. And if you do it in a very specific way, you can show that it has all the same types of properties that your typical Markov chain Monte Carlo algorithm will have. And that it can give you wonderful estimates for things, and you can do lots of cool stuff with it. So that's the basic idea, is you're making a bet with nested sampling that solving this easier problem many times is actually more efficient than solving your hard problem a single time. Whether or not that bet pays off depends a lot on the problem, and I'll kind of go through a little bit in terms of what situations it may or may not work. Now, one caveat I want to address is this uniformly within. You might say, well, what exactly does that mean? What if my prior is super complicated? Or, you've just shown this really simple example with like circles and stuff, or ellipses. So maybe my problem is more complicated. Maybe my thing is not, ellipses. It has some gradient or slope or something to it. Turns out that's okay. As long as you have some function that can transform your particular problem into one that looks simpler, like uniform, then this example, this toy problem is equivalent to what you do in practice. So this is one constraint that nested sampling has, is that to be most effective, you need some sort of what's often called a prior transform that takes your arbitrary function and then morphs it back to be uniform. But this exists for almost all common functions that are used today. So this usually is not a huge concern. But you definitely ask me about this afterwards if you do want to know more. The other thing that nested sampling tries to do, and the technical motivation, is integrating the posterior. Now, what do I mean by that? So originally, when I showed this expression, you have this term for Bayes' theorem, and we have this term on the bottom, this evidence term. Now, normally, we just ignore this term because it's a constant, right? So if you're just interested in inferring some parameters, this thing doesn't matter. The parameters are not part of this. So you can just ignore it and go about your day and have a great time. But if you're now interested in comparing two different models, notice that now this term is a function of the model and in fact does not depend on the parameters. So this term, is often called the Bayesian evidence, can be useful in doing model comparisons because it's telling you the probability of your data given your model over all possible combinations of parameters that are consistent with that model. So I'm just going to rewrite this to be a little simpler, just so I can save on some notation. So this constant Z is the one that we'll be kind of interested in here. And this is going to be what we call the evidence. And this is just, if you write it out, this normalization term. So this is the integral over all of the available parameter space, essentially omega theta, of the likelihood times the prior, over all the parameters. So one way to look at the evidence here is essentially you're computing an average, an average of your likelihood over the prior. And this intuitively makes some sense. So what this bottom term is telling you essentially is your model at any given position has some likelihood, how probable that it's consistent with the data. And you're just weighting it based on all possible parameter combinations based on how likely you think those combinations are. So you're kind of getting some likelihood average over the entire parameter space. One thing I want to take away from this is that this seems like a really natural thing to do when doing lots of inference, when comparing two models. You have two models, you don't know what the parameters are. Then what you probably should do is you should say average over all possible parameters and then compare which one does better in general. And which one does better overall over all possible parameters is probably the one that you want to go with. Now, this does mean that this quantity depends on the prior, which is quite important to note. So even if you have the same model, but you have two different priors for that model, you will get two different evidences. And that makes sense because you are making different assumptions about what parameters are allowed and what parameters are not allowed. But just keep that in mind when you're actually, and you're trying to apply this in practice, because you can be in for some nasty surprises if you don't take that into account. So one way to think about this integral is that this integral is super nasty, right? You have some, you know, probability, it's over all the possible parameters. And so, you know, let's imagine a simple problem where you have like, you know, you have this 20 dimensional integral. Ugh, that's disgusting, right? Very difficult. Nested sampling tries to take this very particular view of how you want to solve this problem. So let's imagine that we have like a 2 or 3 dimensional problem here. And so this is again our distribution. And if we think about this from like a physics perspective, or one thing that comes up a lot in problems is integrating on a sphere. And typically one way of doing the integral, it's very hard, is doing it in Cartesian coordinates, so X and Y and Z, and doing it in 3 dimensions. And then someone says, oh, why don't we do this in shells? You know, 4 pi r squared dr, and we just integrate in 1 dimension instead. And we know what the volume of that shell is, and we just kind of go out from the center. And that's a much easier integral in lots of cases where you have symmetry. Let's take the same idea and you know, project it into higher dimensions in more general context. Let's say that we have these shells, and each shell now has some, you know, corresponds to some value, lambda, and also has some infinitesimal volume or differential volume dv. Then we can rewrite this integral, you know, using some change of variables to do this. So now this is essentially equivalent to saying, you know, for every shell in the problem, which, you know, has some value, it has some volume, we're just going to add up and integrate out from the center. And for every problem that exists, you can do some version of this, you know, change of variables. This no longer, you know, this doesn't need to be a symmetrical shell. This could be any arbitrary curve, but this sort of same formalism works. Then under some very simple regularity assumptions, you can do a bit of an inversion. And you can say, okay, I'm going to rewrite this. And then I can see that this has 2 terms, this amplitude term and this volume term. And one thing that I want to point out here is that if you're thinking about the contributions to this integral, the thing that matters is the combination of the two. In other words, it's not only the probability of points at a given location, it's how many points there are. So the way that I like to think about this, it's often called the typical set in statistics. And this is true for every problem, is that when you have a lot of parameters, the thing that matters most is not how good the fit you get for that set of parameters, but also how many possible good fits you could have. So for a typical case, imagine that you have, you know, some 5-dimensional problem or something, and you know you're fitting your 5 parameters, and you say like, okay, I have the best fit here, but there's only 1 best fit. Right? But there are a bunch of mediocre fits that are like 1 sigma off or 2 sigma off. And in fact, there might be so many more mediocre fits that marginalizing over them, their total contribution to the problem is a lot larger. So this is just trying to point out very explicitly that it's the combination of these 2 things that actually matters the most. And one of the cool things about nested sampling is it has a way to take this into account very explicitly. So this is sort of what I mean. If you think about, in general, you can show that in most cases, this volume term scales as r to the d minus 1, where d is the number of dimensions of the problem. So this term kind of really explodes the more parameters you add. Your posterior, of course, this is going from the center, so you have some peak density, and then it kind of drops off. And the typical set is the purple. It's the one that goes in between. And so you can show for, say, like a simple Gaussian that this means that the typical fit is essentially equal to like the, you know, square root of d minus 1 type thing. And so if you have like 5 parameters, then your typical fit is actually 2 sigma away. And if you have 26 or 25, then it's actually 5 sigma away. So even though it might not look like it, the more parameters you add, the more combinations of parameters are available, the more this term, essentially the total contribution to this integral, is further and further away. It is also very useful generically to understand lots of sampling. So if you're interested in seeing more, I have like some 50-page like white paper I wrote at some point for some reason that's available in the archive that goes into this in a lot of detail. So getting back to this, why am I taking this humongous digression with this whole integral thing? That's because nested sampling is trying to do this integral. That's really what it tries to do. It has this interesting philosophical motivation that maybe you can take a more clever approach to sampling. But technically, this is what it's really trying to do. And so what nested sampling does is it literally tries to solve this problem using exactly this strategy. So what you do is you redefine volume to be what they call prior volume. So rather than just the parameter, it's the parameter weighted by the prior. And then you get exactly the same picture as before. And all nested sampling is trying to do is to go from this picture on the left, which is essentially defining these particular contours and their volumes and their likelihoods, and then turning it into the picture on the right, where you get this simple one-dimensional integral. And every little contour here, like for example, with L1 and L2, get associated with some particular volume, X1 and X2. And that's nested sampling in a nutshell, is how to do this transformation from a many-dimensional problem to a one-dimensional problem by being very, very clever. So here's the sort of the change of variables, and you flip it around under some basic regularity conditions that I can discuss, and you get this result. And this is essentially saying that what you're trying to do is you're integrating from a likelihood of from a prior volume of zero to a prior volume of one. So one is when you encompass all of the prior, makes sense. That means that you're sampling the entire box here. Zero means that you have none of the box left, so you've hit the maximum point. So that sort of is what nested sampling tries to do, is you start from the outside. And what you're doing is you slowly construct these nested shells, starting from sort of the yellow, going to the green, each getting smaller and smaller, using this very simple strategy. And over time, you end up estimating this integral here. And as a byproduct, you end up getting the posteriors out for free. Right, that's the technical detail there. So here's exactly what it looks like in practice, is you're, once you have a bunch of points, you can then estimate the integral on the right side by a simple Riemann sum. And then this volume term, we don't quite know, and nested sampling's cleverness is that even though you don't quite know what these particular results are here, these X's, the volumes associated with each of these given contours, because if you did, the problem would be over. But you can construct an estimator for the volumes by using some clever statistical tricks. And so using the central limit theorem, you can sort of shrink the errors on those and show that it behaves in a very particular fashion. And that allows you to sort of substitute in for these weights, which is just the likelihood times the differential volume. So that's the total amplitude. And then you're done. And so what you can think of what nested sampling is doing is it's giving you these weights, these important weights, and that gives you the posterior for free. So you get a bunch of samples, all of them on these different little contours, you're shrinking from the outside going in, all of them get assigned these weights. These weights are proportional to both the actual probability, but also the volume that that probability encompasses. That gives you this weight. And then if you just take every point and you weight it according to this expression, you get a free estimate of your posterior. Or any quantities you want to use the posterior for. And this is a lot of how nested sampling gets used in practice, is you get both of these things for free. You get both this integral for free, and you also get this posterior as well as part of the same process. And again, the cool thing about this is that the weights are proportional to the typical set, which means that you actually are directly estimating this, this purple curve. And that should make sense, because when you're doing this integral, you can think of actually integrating in a line from right to left, and you're actually trying to go over this purple curve rather than the red or the blue. Yes. Yep. So how do we actually get to that? So because this essentially this is all done using level sets. If you have bimodal distributions, you actually perfectly encompass them. You kind of slice through both distributions at the same time, or both modes. So nested sampling actually can handle bimodal distributions and multimodal distributions extremely easily. So I'll show some practical examples of that a bit later.
And I have one more question.
Yep.
In that scenario, when you are sampling from a distribution, how does it compare with, in sense, the MCMT analysis?
So you're saying it because you have to pick a prior that's uniform?
So I can pick a prior same parameter that's uniform, but I also depend on a quantity. No more in this uniform way. If you want to understand
transformation,
so what you have. Yep. But I want to understand that in certain scenario, how nested sampling performs in comparison to say EMD or any other.
I can also get to that at the end. The answer is that it depends a lot on the problem. And so in some cases, nested sampling performs way better. And in some cases, MCMC performs way better. So I can show like an example on like a toy problem where I got the creators of MCMC to like sign off on it. I can do it at the end of the talk. Yeah. So this is all just motivation. So I just want to check before I go on, do people have other questions about sort of this basic setup before I move on to other stuff with nested sampling? So for anyone who's used this before, I hope that this helps to clarify kind of why it's useful and kind of the motivation for what's going on. Okay, so now I'll move on to some of the cool stuff that this does. So one of the things that is neat about nested sampling is that it actually generates points for you in a very, very different way than MCMC does. Because it's trying to estimate this integral, that means it has a natural stopping criteria as well. Right, because you're trying to estimate this evidence to do model selection, and that means that you have a very specific criteria you can set, which is essentially by constraining the remainder or the error on the integral. So you can easily say, I want to estimate this term to like 5% accuracy, and you can keep going until you estimate that you've integrated over where the remainder term is less than 5%. So that's what I've shown explicitly here, is the estimator for this looks something like this, where any given iteration, you have two terms, the current estimate plus the remainder. And oops, it looks like actually you can't actually see what that looks like. But the term up there is just that you can write this in a fractional way. So you can specify this in terms of like fractional quantities instead of absolute quantities. So we can substitute in for what we just derived earlier. That's just the sum of the weights. So we are very happy there. And then for the remainder term, we can put in upper bound. And the hard upper bound essentially is the maximum likelihood times the current volume that you're at. And what that means is essentially you're in this worst case scenario where you sample and the distribution looks cool. And then suddenly you hit this maximum likelihood slab that is the rest of the distribution. And that is the absolute worst case where just everything inside is just this gigantic slab of likelihood. Now in practice, you don't know quite what the maximum likelihood is and you don't quite know what the volume is. So you can replace this hard upper bound with a little bit of a softer upper bound. By substituting in both the maximum likelihood you estimate at the current moment and also the estimate of the volume. So most of the time, this upper bound is still pretty hard. And in general, you're very unlikely to underestimate the remainder this way, although it's not perfect. But what this means is essentially, if you want to estimate your particular integral to some precision in terms of the remainder, it is easy to do so. And so nested sampling, unlike say Markov chain Monte Carlo, naturally will terminate at a given point. Again, it depends on if you're really interested in using it to estimate this quantity, but this does create a very natural stopping criterion for sampling. Now, in practice, I think this is where nested sampling really shines and gets to some of the questions you asked, which is that because it functions in a completely different way than MCMC, you can also be much more creative in terms of how you apply it. And this is why I think in general, it gets used a bunch, is you can do a lot of really cool things. So naively speaking, here's where we're at right now. Nested sampling needs some way to sample points that are better than the previous point. So that's sort of sampling within these uniform slabs. So let's imagine that right now we're at iteration 2 of this simple model. And we've sampled a bunch of points here. These are the ones that we rejected, which are shown in pink. And then we've accepted this one because we need to sample one that was better than point number one. Now let's imagine we need to keep sampling some more because we need to get points that are better. And the further we go, the more and more points we need to pick randomly, because if we have no guess, we're just going to keep picking points from like the prior, and the remaining volume will keep shrinking and shrinking. So every iteration, we're just going to get more and more inefficient because we're randomly guessing, which is not great. And in fact, you can show that the rate of compression is actually something that nested sampling is able to control. And so the sampling becomes exponentially more inefficient over time. This is not good. So if you do a naive approach where you just pick randomly everywhere, you're kind of screwed. But method sampling allows you to do lots of very clever things because you're sampling in such a different way from MCMC. And one of those is what's called the constrained prior. So you can often make a guess as to what your remaining prior looks like. This doesn't actually need to be perfect. I can go into some versions of this that loosen the bounds a bit. But you know, just to conceptually, let's imagine that we actually try and bound these priors in real time. So let's imagine we start from this simple model here. And as we shrink, what we're going to do is we're just going to create an ellipse around all the points. And so as time goes on, we're going to shrink more. And then eventually, we can actually create two ellipses. There's no issue in nested sampling with creating two regions instead of one, or three, or 10, as long as you have enough, you know, to bound all the points. Nested sampling is just proposing points randomly, right, from the whole space. And so as things shrink, what this means is that nested sampling has this really, really intrinsic ability to identify and follow different solutions as they arise in real time. So unlike with other approaches where you're trying to sample from distributions, you know, at the beginning, in nested sampling, because you're slowly sort of going from the outside in and slowly increasing your threshold, your points will naturally tend to gravitate towards these different modes, which makes them quite easy to both characterize and sample from. So this is actually really neat. Here's examples of how this works in practice. So this is an example problem that I've taken from the Dynasty release paper, where you're sampling from what's known as like a Gaussian ring or a Gaussian shell. So all the points that I currently have sampled are in purple, and all the gray points are essentially proposals that I would make with different strategies. And the one on the left shows the worst strategy where you have no constraint at all. And then you can see if you include like a single ellipse versus multiple ellipses that overlap using clustering algorithms, or you have some set of overlapping balls or cubes, you can essentially get different estimates for how well you can bound this distribution. They all have different properties and different heuristics, but this is essentially the main idea. So this is really cool, right? Like, could you imagine sampling from, you know, two circles in like a typical MCMC algorithm? Not as much, it's very hard, but for nested sampling, it actually is very easy to do. It kind of arises naturally. And for this problem, there are some plots in the paper showing actually what the sampling looks like over time. So you can actually see how it shrinks from sort of what you start with to actually what you end with. So this is one of the really cool things about nested sampling that I think really has made it very popular, is the ability to essentially adjust on the fly to lots of these very complicated distributions. What's neater as well about them is that you also don't need any particular, you can also be very creative when it comes to generating samples as well. The only real constraint that nested sampling has is that when you pick a new sample, it just has to be better than the last sample, right? The likelihood just has to be strictly greater because it has to be in an area that's a little smaller. And it doesn't matter how you do it. It all just matters that you do it in a way that's uniform. And so that means you can have a bunch of different approaches. The simplest is just propose uniformly inside a bound. So I showed you before, you know, you have like these overlapping ellipses or something. You can just pick a point randomly within the ellipse, right? Super easy. That is uniform. But what if your ellipse is off? You know, maybe then you miss a little bit of the prior and things are not so great. So there are a bunch of other sampling strategies that you can do as well, where you can essentially run MCMC inside of nested sampling and use it in like a very simple way to just propose random points. This works out pretty well. You can also do things like slice sampling, which I won't get into today, which allows you to do very more creative trajectories. You can also do some Hamiltonian slicing, again, which I won't get into, which allows you to use gradients. But the TLDR essentially is that you can use all these different creative sampling strategies because your ultimate goal is just getting a sample uniformly distributed within something. And that is a lot easier than getting a sample that is proportional to the actual unknown density at any given point. So because the problem is easier, you have a lot more flexibility with how you pick points and how you bound them. And so these two things go back to the main motivation for nested sampling philosophically, which is because you're solving an easier problem many times, you could be more creative about how you actually approach the solutions, and that can give you these fun benefits. So the upshot to all of this is that a lot of this stuff I implemented in a code called Dynasty. There are other codes that also exist, and I want to give a lot of credit, for example, to Multinest and Polycore and UltraNest and other sort of precursors to Dynasty. that very much influences development as well as MC. So Dynasty is fun in the sense that this logo for the code is actually me running Dynasty on the logo. So this is actually how the code works in practice, where I created like a little toy distribution that was made to mimic the actual letters. And the color is proportional to essentially the typical set weight. So the place where it's yellow essentially is where the weights are maximum, and then the plates that are purple are often where it starts to decrease. So in that case, it is pretty fun because you can see essentially in real time that the actual weights of the points that contribute the most are the ones that make up the edges of the letters, not the ones that make up the centers. So Dynasty is this fun open source Python package that was designed to make nested sampling a lot easier to use and also really easy to customize. So the whole point of the code is to be super easy to uptake and also have a lot of flexibility. It's very modular, so you can mix and match all of the stuff that I showed earlier. So all the different bounding methods, sampling methods, there are other things you can change too. And then it has a bunch of built-in plotting utilities and post-processing tools in case you want to actually see like what the bounds look like and how things are evolving over time, which I like to do to see how it's working. So that's just a brief overview. At the end, I'm happy to go through some like simple examples, but what I want to just ask now is, do people have any quick questions before I move on to talk a little bit about some advantages and disadvantages, or pros and cons, and a little bit of the dynamic part? Or so far, do people feel like they, nested sampling kind of makes sense, looks nice, maybe not so nice?
Well, so this for me just to make sure I'm okay, the strategy is that you're sampling at a bunch of points, and then you're dynamically making a model for what the cluster you're showing.
Yeah, or a model of what a slice through the posterior looks like, at a fixed, which is at some likelihood level.
Right.
Yeah.
So part of this, I guess, is to choose, as you were saying, the shapes of these clusters. I guess maybe I'm not quite following how you decide what that strategy for the shapes is.
Yeah, so actually it's the strategy for the shapes is essentially a basic clustering technique. So with nested sampling, because you are less limited to sort of the typical like constraints of MCMC, what you can do is you can often run hundreds or thousands of points at once. And then you can use those points to then get a sense of what the shape of the distribution looks like. So in this case, like for this multiple ellipsoids one, what I'm actually running is essentially a version of like a clustering algorithm that tries to break up all the points into some clusters and then construct ellipses around them. And then it's the union of all the ellipses that then make the distribution we're proposing. So it's all like essentially very organic and non-parametric. So in cases where you have like two clusters, it'll then hopefully identify them and then put ellipses around them. And the ellipses are set so that they include all of the points with a little extra, inflating factor.
Okay.
No, it all is set adaptively based on the size and distribution of the points. Yeah, so all of that stuff is determined on the fly while you're actually running the code. Yeah, I mean, full caveat, the clustering algorithm that's used by default in Dynasty is kind of a more simple one. There are some of the other implementations use a little bit better ones. But that's essentially what's happening. And it's why you can see if you go up really close to some of these things, you can see there actually is like a little bit of sets here, like this gray region, which kind of sticks out a bit because the ellipse ends up being oriented in a bit of a different direction. But yeah, it's all done on the fly.
And it's the key point here meant to be in order of increasing efficiency?
In this problem, yes, but in general, no. In general, it depends a lot. Essentially, the multiple ellipsoids is kind of the standard workhorse that works okay in lots of dimensions. The overlapping balls and cubes are very efficient in low dimensions, but like really break down very fast in high dimensions. And the single ellipsoid tends to be less efficient, but more robust if you know that your distribution probably only has one mode, you just don't quite know what it looks like. But if you're worried about having like multiple solutions or something, usually the default option in Dynasty is for the multiple ellipsoids to be running. Yep. Yes.
Sorry, you may get to this, but if you have your problems, I don't know, dimensionality or maybe some rough idea what you're looking for, like, are there heuristics for like picking that strategy or like making sure, like, I know my issues with multiple ellipsoids, so it's not have the same distribution, like, beyond just running things in a bunch of different settings, are there?
So there are some settings in the code. So the default actually is a little adaptive, which tries to, you know, based on the dimensionality of your problem, it tries to set the sampling method accordingly to be, you know, the one that's more efficient. But in general, yeah, I'd say the key, there are some like rules of thumb to use in terms of you generally want to have as many points in a mode to characterize the covariance as there are modes. So if you're in like a five-dimensional problem, you know, to characterize the covariance, you need like 12 points or so. And if you have like three modes, then that means you should have a minimum of 36 points. And in general, you want like a factor of a few more than that. So the default for Dynasty generally is like a few hundred, which is usually totally fine for lots of problems with like, you know, 10, 20 dimensions. But if you're starting to go to like really big dimensions where lots of code struggle, then you might need more. Or if you expect to have like dozens of modes, then you would need to have a lot of points to make sure that every mode has like some, you know, enough of them. Yes.
Yeah, so we have one problem where we continue to usually get the point outside the region, the random buffer.
Yep.
We believe that in this facility we have to capture the output of the solution, right?
Mm-hmm.
How that governs that decision? So you do from that.
Yes, so the key here is how the sampling actually occurs. So if we go back a couple slides to look at the actual way that this is sampling, which is these, you know, individual slabs and looking at the typical set, what Dynasty nested sampling is doing is you're allocating a sample based on both the prior there, but also the likelihood. And that actually means that you generally are very sensitive to the tails. So you generally spend, the way you can think of it is you're integrating over the tails in these fixed steps. And so if you have these long tails that contribute to large regions of the prior, you actually will sample them as you go through. You know, the density of sampling them, I'll actually get to in a second with dynamic nested sampling. But the way the nested sampling works is that you actually do end up exploring the tails in most cases.
In terms of how robust this is, are there problems that MC will fail on? That is, the chains never converge, but Dynasty actually solves?
I think, you know, it depends on, yeah. So I think a good example, so in theory, all MCMC methods will work given infinite time. The problem is always with finite time, how quickly they converge and how effectively they sample. And so, you know, a really good example of a problem that MC would struggle with is actually like the rings. You know, the way that MC would do proposals on these rings would essentially take a lot of points either diagonal, like perpendicular to the rings, which would be accepted, essentially moving along the, you know, the edges. But any proposal that would go, you know, across the rings, either this way or this way, would be rejected. And so sampling would be very, very inefficient in this case for MC, but quite efficient for Dynasty.
Okay. Hard to imagine a physics problem that would lead to that type of likelihood function, but maybe there are some other examples.
So, there are thanks. Some other ones. So you can check the paper actually for some good ones, but periodicity tends to introduce some of these types of constraints. Which comes up in, say, for example, gravitational wave inference. Also, you can have secondary solutions, and generally in problems that I work on, which involve deriving distances to, say, galaxies or stars, oftentimes there are secondary solutions, like, say, with redshifts or stellar distances. And in those cases, often MC will fail to characterize both solutions very accurately. They either get stuck in one mode or the other, and nested sampling tends to be more robust. So that's another case is where you have two solutions, one which is a lot bigger than the other. You can often miss the second one. Hopefully that helps to answer your question.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Sorry. Yep, that's good.
No problem. So we are still good on time. So I think in the last part of this, I want to talk a little bit about the advantages and disadvantages to standard nested sampling, and then go into a little bit of how the dynamic part of the talk, how that helps to address a little bit of these. And then we can go to some more questions or possibly a demo, depending on what people feel like. So the advantages to this, because I want to make very clear that nested sampling, just like MCMC, is a tool. And like every tool, there are places where it's very good, there are places where it's very bad, and there are places where you might want to use one or both or neither. One of the advantages to nested sampling is that it can characterize these very complicated uncertainties in real time. So multiple solutions, you know, very curving degeneracies, these types of periodic constraints, all of these things are things that nested sampling tends to do better at than MCMC for a lot of these problems, especially the multiple solutions one, because you can sort of capture those as they arise rather than, you know, after the fact. In some cases, nested sampling can be much more efficient. Going back to one of the original questions about how it does compared to MC, I do have one example of a slide showing that it can do about 10 times better in lots of simple examples. It possesses well-motivated stopping criteria. Again, this depends on exactly what you're trying to do, but if you are trying to estimate things like the evidence or you just want to have something to terminate, this can be quite nice. The fact that it's estimating this normalizing factor, this marginal likelihood, can be very useful for model selection problems, which again, I can talk a little bit about at the end. But that's something that, for example, typical MCMC methods are not able to do. Those are really able to just estimate the actual probability distributions there. They're not really helpful in estimating this normalization. The disadvantages, as I said, they require prior transform, most implementations at least. This prior transform exists in a lot of places. I have tons of examples in the documentation about how you can get them from like simple SciPy for a lot of standard distributions. But for some cases, this can be a bit annoying. Or if you're working with very, very custom priors, they might not exist. But in general, they do. The second is that nested sampling, the runtime is going to be sensitive to the prior. Now, this is generally seen by a lot of people as a negative. Right. In other words, if you have a large prior, it's going to take longer because you're integrating over the prior. If you have a small prior, it'll be shorter. And so nested sampling, generally, when I talk to people, people are like, how do I, this is annoying. What do I do? And then my answer is usually, well, you have to think really carefully about your prior. How big is your prior? How expansive is your prior? Like now there are lots of trade-offs where those directly contribute to runtime in a way that they don't for MCMC. Where if you have just a humongous prior in MCMC, you can often converge really quickly. But in nested sampling, because you're trying to estimate the integral over the prior, it's gonna be slow. And that means you do wanna be careful about picking priors that are enormous if you know that they're gonna be smaller, or if you don't know, maybe nested sampling isn't actually the right tool for the problem if you really are that uncertain about your priors. And then the third is that the nested sampling, while it can capture certain types of solutions, can also miss them. And this is very technical, but there are certain cases where you can actually have modes die, where they kind of can disappear prematurely. There's some Poisson noise involved. But there are cases where it can actually miss solutions that are captured by MCMC, especially things like spikes. So if you have very, very narrow likelihoods, but that the gradients are well-defined, nested sampling can miss those because they take up a tiny, tiny amount of space. But for MCMC, which is kind of going downhill for a lot of problems, you'll find them eventually. But for nested sampling, you can just miss them entirely. So essentially, that's the big advantages versus disadvantages. Nested sampling is great if you have, reasonable priors that aren't too big, you are interested in doing model selection, and you have these transforms, and you're worried about there being multiple solutions. And MCMC is great if you don't want to worry about that too much. Or if you have humongous priors and you just want to converge to the actual place where the likelihood is maximized. Also, it's more involved, which for some people is quite a con. You have to do a little bit more work to get everything set up. The last one is just really a problem if you're trying to deal with dozens of parameters or hundreds or thousands. Nested sampling is not able to use gradients very naturally and generally it's just not very good. So if anyone here is working with problems which use things like gradients or Hamiltonian Monte Carlo, probably you should not replace it with nested sampling. So the last thing I want to talk about briefly is dynamic nested sampling. And this is an attempt to resolve at least some of the concerns that nested sampling has towards MCMC, or to make it behave a little bit more flexibly. Now, the picture that I'm showing here is exactly the sort of conceptual one that I've shown earlier about how you're trying to, nested sampling is trying to estimate this integral. So you should think of this plot from left to right. This left side over here at 0, 0, this is the prior, this is for one, this is going towards zero, this is in log. And what nested sampling is doing is it's starting from here and it's integrating to the left. And so the way that it works is that there's often a typical mean step size for nested sampling, which is one over the number of points. So you're sort of compressing by a constant factor. And eventually you hit the distribution and suddenly you go, whoa, I have all this, you know, probability here. And then you decline as your probability increases, but the volume decreases, and then you terminate. And you can see that the spacing between this is always the same. And so what this means is that when you hit the distribution, you don't really adapt like your spacing to account for the fact that suddenly you have a lot more probability there. And this is one of the immediate drawbacks. If you add in more points for nested sampling, like say you add a second or a third or a fourth, you add in just as many points at the center of the distribution where all the probability is as you do in the tail where there's no probability. And this might be fine if you really care about the tails, as one of the questions just asked. But if you really just care about the center, this is a humongous waste, right? You could think of this as the fraction of time that you spend exploring, you know, nowhere as or very small regions of probability is the same as you spend exploring the bulk of the distribution. So this is a problem. Dynamic nested sampling just says, why do we have to do this? Why can't we just put all the points here? And it turns out you can. There's actually nothing in nested sampling that prevents you from doing this other than a little bit of like, you know, overhead and logistics. But that's essentially what dynamic nested sampling wants to do, is it wants to dynamically allocate points to places where the probability density is higher. Or, you know, if you're interested in estimating the evidence, actually, you want points out in the tail because that's where lots of the probability for the integral is going to be located. And that's essentially it. So the original algorithm for doing this and the basic idea came from Ed Higson, who was a student at Cambridge, and now I think works for Goldman Sachs. So he deserves all the credit for this, and Dynasty is what just the big implementation. And so the way that this works essentially is shown up here. There's a little bit of a cutoff from Zoom. So I will try and just highlight what I can. So this plot, there are four panels, and the only change is the strategy that we use for sampling. So every color here is actually the same number of points. All that changes where we allocate them. The top panel essentially is the same plot as the one I just showed. So this is the, except now it goes from left to right instead of from right to left. So essentially prior volume of one is on the left and you shrink as you go towards the right. The black line is essentially the standard approach. The green is one where you're focused on the tails, which is focused on estimating the integral. And then the blue is focused if you're just interested in estimating the posterior. You just want all the points where the probability is. And the red is like an 80-20 mixture of the two. So 80% posterior, 20% on the evidence. So you get a little bit of a compromise for that. The second panel just shows the likelihood as you go from, you know, the edge of the prior to the center. As you can see, it's normalized, so they kind of all go up at the same rate and end at the same point. This one on the bottom, this is the essentially this importance weight distribution. So that's this, you know, red curve here. So that's shown on the bottom, and you can see that all of them kind of estimate the same shape, although the location slightly differs because the accuracy to which we know kind of the volume depends on the number of points. And if we have fewer points, like in this blue case where we have almost no points out here, or the red one where we have fewer, you don't know it as well. And so we get these arbitrary shifts. But for the green and the black, where we have much better, a lot more points out here, then we get much better idea of exactly where this, this curve should be located. And the bottom one just shows the evidence. So this is the actual estimate of the integral with some error bars. And what you can see is exactly what I just described. So the blue one, which just focuses on the posterior, has humongous error bars, makes sense. The green has the smallest, makes sense. The black is, you know, the default. And then the red is this compromise, and you can see it does okay. You know, it has some slightly larger errors than the default, but it's, in generally, it does a much better job estimating the posterior without like a huge you know, decline. Yes.
Yeah, so suppose I calculate phase factor.
Yep.
So someone give a run with dynamic sampling, others give a run with distance sampling. We give me we have a slightly different weighting in the tail. Now I calculate the base factor. How much is that? The same data set, somebody chose.
Yep.
Dynamic sampling just nested.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's shown here, right? As you can see, these are the same exact, you know, number of samples. And the green is one that's is designed to calculate the base factor or the model selection portion. And the black is one that's just the normal default algorithm. You can see here that the error bar is slightly smaller. So you actually are able to get an improvement in your base factor calculation with the same number of points.
But is it artificial or is it?
No, it's real. Yeah, this is real. Like, this is saying that if you put more points in the tails, you'll get a better estimate of the integral than if you put more points in the center. Just because the importance of the integral depends a lot on knowing exactly where the normalization is, the volume. And also the number of points you need is kind of inversely proportional to the remaining volume. So as you're doing more and more of the integral, you need fewer points because it just contributes less to the overall integral. So that's what green is showing. You can see this decline that starts, you know, flat, and then it kind of levels off as you go through the distribution because you need fewer and fewer points as you start doing this integral. But yeah, it's not artificial at all. This is real. So these are actually saying you can allocate the same points in different ways, and you can use them to optimize different things. Another way to look at this is to actually look at the, is to actually look at where the points are. So this is the problem that I'm sampling, and this is just a 2D, a 3D Gaussian. So here's the corner plots, and the color is based on the weights. And you can see just in the static case, you have some points that are kind of further out and some that are closer in. And then, of course, the weights are kind of in this little ring around the main center. Makes sense. In the 100% posterior case, I mean, we're just dumping all the points in the center, right? That's easy. And the evidence case, we actually have more points in the edges than in the static case. So this is actually a physical demonstration of just, it's all about where we put the points and how we actually account for them in the weighting. So dynamic nested sampling is very nice, and it allows you to control some of these properties depending on what you're trying to do. So if you really just care about estimating this integral to the maximum accuracy, you can do that. If you want to use the same data set and estimate the posterior to 100% accuracy, you know, using the same number of data points, you can do that too. Or as is default, you can often compromise. The red, which is what I, you know, when I talk to people, is like this 80-20 mix, because most of the time I found people care more about the posterior, but they don't want to have no evidence of, you know, estimate of the base factor. They like to have some, you know, constraints on that. Versus a static one where you kind of just end up, you know, equally weighting all across the distribution. So that's pretty much it. I think it's about the right time for questions, given that we had some in the middle of the talk. So I kind of described, you know, a couple ways to think about nested sampling conceptually in this attempt to kind of solve this set of easier problems, which is how to shrink these, you know, sort of level sets of, you know, fixed likelihood or higher likelihood over time. Then how that connects to this idea of transforming this, you know, high dimensional integral into this low dimensional integral, and how you're able to, nested sampling is able to sort of resolve that that approach. We talked a little bit about how this allows for very creative things in practice. So allowing these clustering algorithms to derive, like, you know, topology on the fly, allowing very flexible proposals because the problem is so easy. And then finally, how you can modify it a little bit to incorporate these dynamic effects. And then finally, how this can all be accessed through a fun package or a tool that I developed called Dynasty. And that's kind of it. So. At this point, happy to take any and all additional questions on this.
Okay, great.
So, any further questions for Josh?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask if you had some like beta examples for like for dynasty expression density.
Oh yeah, I do. This one I put in the paper. I actually checked with Dan before I put it in there just to make sure he was cool with it. So this is the sort of standard example we wanted to compare against MC. And the reason we picked this is it's the very simple problem that comes up a lot. So it's a very simple linear regression with three parameters, a slope, intercept, and a scatter. So there's like intrinsic scatter in the data, in addition to measurement uncertainties. And so we defined this. I defined a reasonable set of prior constraints on what we think the slope and the intercept could be, just kind of by eyeballing the data. And then what's shown on the right essentially is the sampling efficiency versus the number of likelihood calls that's available. And so what you can see just on the right is that a fixed effective sample size is shown as this gray line. And so things, if things were always the same, they would fall upon this. And so MC is shown here, which I ran with the with some default settings. A custom implementation of Metropolis, like MCMC, like a standard one that you would use with like a simple proposal, is shown here in orange, which is about the same. If I run a MCMC version of Dynasty called RWalk, I get a little better. But if I run some of the defaults, which include the red and the blue, which do uniform sampling, you can see that it's about 10 times more efficient. So for the simple problem, Dynasty wins. But a lot of that is because the priors are sort of very constrained. And the problem is very easy. And so in other cases, you know, Dynasty can easily lose if the prior is like huge or other stuff. But this is like one example where it does very, very well. Yeah. And again, like there are other places where it does not do so well, but this is one where I, like a simple problem where I think, or which isn't too unlike a lot of the problems that people might be working on, where it actually does quite well. So I was very pleased to see the performance. I think there's another question over here.
Yeah. I used the both EMC and the Dynasty in a few problems in calculating the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And for that few problems, I find Dynasty is much more efficient than EMC in calculating that. So my question is this a generic feature of just the few problems I know?
It should be a generic feature, and that's primarily because nested sampling is designed to estimate the evidence. So compared to MC, which is often estimating the evidence through some other means, but it's primarily designed to sample or estimate the posterior, Dynasty is inherently designed to estimate the evidence itself, and so therefore it should be more efficient. There are other methods, by the way, that are designed to estimate the evidence that can build off of like MCMC approaches. And those can also be much more efficient than nested sampling if applied in the right way. But essentially, it just comes down to the fact that nested sampling is supposed to estimate the evidence that's what's designed to do. So it generally does pretty good when that's what you're using it for, whereas MCMC is not.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I have one question. So kind of problem I did a problem with like 13, 14 parameters. And what I find is that EMC is performs faster than Dynasty, but
yep.
The posterior distribution of the tail, as you said, Dynasty performs better.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm telling now is that in life points, I choose, if I take like, say, about 1,000 in life points, my EMC is like a kind of force faster than Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that correct choice I should
take as a user? So just to go back and repeat the question for people on Zoom, us a particular example where there's a 34-dimensional problem and EMC appears to perform better than Dynasty. And so there's some questions about live point choices. The first thing I would ask is, have you checked what the autocorrelation times are for the MC runs? And do those all look like they're pretty reasonable? Yep. So in general, the rule of thumb that I picked for live points is just you want it to be kind of dimension squared times a few. So for a 34-dimensional problem, I think the, you know, using 1,000 is actually quite reasonable. So I don't think you have to go too many more, definitely not too much less than that. Especially if you're worried about there being, you know, possibly multiple solutions. If you're very interested in doing efficiency and you expect that there's only one mode, and you could try running it in like a single ellipsoid bounding mode, and that might be more effective. But in general, I'd say it sounds pretty fair. Are there any questions either in person or over Zoom?
Okay, so there's no more questions. Let's stop here. Thanks again, Josh.